Okay, Google, find me a podcast about War Machine and Hordes, please.
All right, I have a podcast ready to go. Let's start with Tangential with Sung Soo.
Okay, Google, do you have any more information about the podcast?
It's a War Machine and Hordes podcast whose goal is to educate, inspire, and entertain.
Okay, Google, play Tangential with Sung Soo.
Today, we're joined by Jay Larson. We talk about the creation and evolution of Chain Attack, his involvement with the American WTC player selections, and some must-hit and avoid eateries along the War Machine Weekend Trail. I've got a ton of content in the works. You can follow me on Facebook at CO Wargaming, and you can also find me on Twitter at Sungsu, T-S-E-U-N-G-T-S-U, to ensure you stay up to date. Before we jump into that conversation with Jay, I've been getting a lot of questions about the podcasts I've been working on and kind of my goals with them. So I'm going to start off by saying I have no set amount of content I want to deliver. I don't want to commit myself to delivering monthly or weekly or anything in between. When and if I have great conversations with amazing people that I want to share, that's when the content will be delivered. I have no immediate or future plans on monetizing the podcast. I know it might be hard to believe, but truly the reason I'm doing this podcast is because I enjoy doing it. If you want to support the podcast and my fragile ego, be sure to give me a like on social media. It's really kind of how I gauge how well the podcast is being received in the community. That being said, I do appreciate all the feedback, and I'm humbled at the responses. Without any further ado, though, here's that conversation with Jay. On the line now, we have the owner of Discount Games Incorporated, CEO of Muse on Minis, Disney fanboy, founder and host of Chain Attack and the Meta Podcasts, the War Machine and Hordes podfather himself, Jay Larson. Jay, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for coming on the pod. So for those few people who might not be familiar with you, Jay, would you take a minute and just share your War Machine backstory?
Sure. So I've been playing War Machine for roughly, it's been probably 12 or 13 years now. I actually got into it because I started selling the product line. It started doing fairly well. And I was like, oh, I should probably know how to play this game that I'm selling. And I'd never played many miniature games before that. Then I sold Trevor Christensen on the game, and we started playing each other quite a bit. We built up a local meta. We started traveling regionally. We started traveling to national events. We started a podcast together with, it was initially Trevor and I who started it, and we had Scott Ray on as a guest host who quickly became a permanent host. And then I just played in a bunch of different events. I've had, through my play history, I had played a bunch of different factions. I've had success with various different factions, and yeah, that's kind of what I've done.
Awesome. And I thought we would just go ahead and jump in with the most important question of the day, which is one of your favorite models, the Hellmouth. So in this imaginary world here, well, I guess real quickly, what are your feelings on the Hellmouth, Jay?
Fuck the Hellmouth. That thing is so ridiculous. Just a quick, this is not even a side rant because I've been specifically asked to rant on this fucking thing, but it's just so ridiculous. Like I was having a conversation about it with Aaron Well, and he was like, yeah, I charged in my Slayer and it did a combo strike, and I needed to roll an 8 on 2 dice because it was 3 for charging, drop a die. And that just feels awful. And it's such a ridiculous model. The armor gets so high. Anyways, yes, it's stupid.
So this is the important question. In this imaginary world, Brian says you can get 2 kittens or Pagani will nerf the shit out of the Hellmouth. Which one is it?
I would pick kittens because that's going to have a bigger positive impact on my life. And so,
okay, there we go. That's fine.
Obviously the greater good is getting Hellmouth fixed, but I guess I'm being selfish on this one.
That's fine. Jay is selfish. Taking the kittens, not nerfing the Hellmouth. Awesome. So I was hoping we could talk about your podcast. Obviously you mentioned Chain Attack, which is the podcast you started years ago with Trevor Christensen, and more recently the Meta. What was the goal when Chain Attack started, and how has it evolved over the years?
So when we started Chain Attack, I approached Trevor, and initially I said, you know, I think it'd be cool for us to do a podcast. And his response was, why would anyone listen to us? And there's so many podcasts out there. What would make us different? And so I was like, well, that's kind of a fair point. And so I thought about it for a while. And then I came back to him and I said, I think that we ought to do two things. The first thing we ought to do is do a battle report. And the second thing we ought to do is then grade the casters that are in the battle report. And so he's like, well, okay, that is something that isn't really being done. And people will probably be interested in the battle report, and people love listening to things getting graded and then like being outraged when you get it wrong and, you know, et cetera. And so, yeah, it works. And so we did that for quite a while. And one of the you asked how it's evolved. One of the things that's evolved is that, you know, we were Chain Attack, a Battle Reports podcast, a War Machine Battle Reports podcast, and we haven't really been doing battle reports of late. And the biggest reason for that is that Trevor's been having a pretty full life, to where, you know, he's working full time, he's going to school full time, he has a church responsibility, he's raising three kids, and a well-done battle report actually takes a pretty big time investment. And so we haven't been doing as much of that. We've still been putting out a weekly free episode and a weekly subscription episode. But the way that we do the content has evolved some. And I'd maybe say another way that it's evolved is that, you know, we try to have the podcast be informative, but we also try to have it be entertaining. And I think that part of the reason why the podcast works, if it works, is because we try to have it feel like it's three friends that are sitting down and talking about War Machine, and kind of have it feel like something that people could just be sitting in at a game night at a game store. So I guess that's kind of been the evolution of the podcast.
Absolutely. And some of my favorite episodes of Chain Attack are honestly the ones where you don't talk about War Machine anymore.
Right.
There's such a good rapport with Wheeler and Trevor nowadays. Like the Star Wars episode, while it infuriated me as you ranked the Star Wars movies, which we won't go into, I love that episode.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
The meta is obviously your newer creation. Could you take a second and go over its goals? Like, why did you think the meta needed to be spawned, given that you have a wildly successful podcast in Chain Attack?
So part of the reason why I wanted to do it is that I've kind of felt like the War Machine has grown to the size and complexity that it's very difficult to be able to cover the whole scope of the game with a set, you know, 3, 4, 5 hosts that are doing a podcast. It's just too complex to be an expert on that whole field. And so I felt like the best way to cover it would be to have guest hosts on who are faction experts and try to interrogate them about what they feel is going on with their faction. And part of the reason why I felt like or hoped that I would be good at it is because I have had the experience with podcasting. And sometimes when you are having a guest on, especially if they haven't had much experience with public speaking or speaking in this type of format, sometimes they can it can be difficult for them to be entertaining. And so hopefully we're able to guide conversations so that they're informative and entertaining. But also over the years, I've developed quite a few social connections in the War Machine community. And so it makes it easier for me to contact people and be like, hey, we'd love to have you on, you know, this podcast and talk about things. And people have been very gracious as far as being willing to come on and be guest hosts on the podcast.
Absolutely. And you have a great set of hosts. And if there is any one person in the United States that might be able to speak intelligently about every faction, I think you have it in Keith Christensen. But how has it been working with the other hosts on that one?
I mean, it's been really good. They're fun guys. They've had a lot of podcast experience as well, obviously. And with Muse on Minis, the podcast kind of coming to a conclusion, it seemed kind of natural to try to lasso those guys into doing something new.
Awesome. And recently, before I started my podcast, you gave me a lot of advice on it. And there are so many people out there creating content right now, whether that's written content in the form of blogs. And as you said, there's a ton of War Machine and Hordes podcasts out there. So since you are the podfather, what advice do you have for those people that are just getting into the world of creating War Machine content?
One of the things I would say is to try to figure out what your format is going to be and to try to stick with that. It also helps if the format that you are doing kind of generates content for you. After you've done 40 episodes, 50 episodes, you know, 100 episodes, sometimes it can be difficult. You're like, okay, well, what are we going to fucking talk about this week? And so that was one of the things that was nice about when we started with Chain Attack, the idea that we came up with, it was every week we're going to be doing a battle report and we're going to be grading casters. And so that's, we didn't have to think about, you know, what are we going to talk about this week? Having a, if you're writing, having kind of a set length that you're looking for, if you're doing a podcast, having a set time, you know, with Chain Attack, almost all the episodes end up being around 60 to 70 minutes. And I think that it's helpful if your audience kind of knows or expects what they're getting into if they subscribe to your content.
Awesome. And like you said, you're so multifaceted. I feel like we could talk about a lot of things. But one of the things on everyone's mind as it kind of approaches is WTC. And I believe you're on the selection panel for WTC. So for those plebs out there, myself included, who haven't gone through a WTC application, what does the selection process look like for America? I know you can win your way in, but I believe you can also apply. Is that correct?
Right. So I'm actually the... There's a few different organizations, whether it has been in the past. There's the USA Committee, and currently that's basically myself, and then I have Zosha, who helps out with some of the website stuff. And that's basically it right now. But I've written up a set of bylaws that the organization has. And on previously... there was a selection committee that I would pick, and I would try to have it be judges who have been involved in running large events. And the hope is that they would have some idea of the player skill, although there would also be resumes that things would be based on, but also so that they would have kind of a idea of the sportsmanship level of the players and would have had interaction with the players in that regard. There's a lot of people who regard the WTC as sending over ambassadors of the country. And so it is good to obviously be sending players who we're proud of. In the past, what we've done is we've had at the American Team Championship, if America wins first place, then that's one team. And then the selection committee picks 10 players, and then those 10 players vote, and they vote for who's going to be the first captain out of those guys. Then that captain picks 4 players, and then out of the remaining 5 guys, they vote, and they pick a captain. We're looking at changing the process in the year coming up. I don't think that I've said this publicly, but I've chatted with some people about it. And the idea that we're looking at right now is there's still going to be with the America's Team Championship. If you win the event, then your team will be qualified. And this year, actually, it was a team from Southern California that won and earned the right to go with that. I think that's fantastic. They weren't a team that I think a lot of people had on their radar at the time, but they, you know, came in, kicked ass and earned the slot. And that's basically exactly working as intended. We want people to have that chance. Like if they're a tight knit meta for them to, you know, practice together and then come and prove themselves. So that's going to be staying. The thing that we're looking at changing is that there will still be resumes, there will still be a selection committee, but when you put in a resume, you will put in if you're wanting to have your resume as just a player, or if you want to have a resume as a captain or as a player. And then the selection committee is going to look at just the players who said that they're interested in being captains, and they will pick a player to be the captain. And then the captain will look among the pool of all the players, and he'll pick his four teammates, and he'll be able to pick based on, you know, players that he thinks will fit well together, factions that will fit well together, etc. And another example with it is that this last year there was a meta that was pretty tight knit, and there were some very good quality players on there, and they said that we're not really interested in going unless we can get basically almost all of our team filled up from our meta. And the selection committee ended up deciding that they weren't going to go that route. But in this example of what we're considering doing for next year, if they picked a captain from someone from that meta, that person would have free reign to pick his local meta mates if he wanted to, if he thought that was going to make the best team. Another reason why we're potentially looking at this is around 2 or 3 years ago, there was the process that we've had in the past has kind of worked where the committee will pick who they think are the best 10 players without consideration of necessarily faction or how well people are going to play together. And so we've had, for example, teams where there were like 4 Kador players that were on a team. And in the WTC format, you're not allowed to overlap casters. So if I'm playing, for example, Butcher 3, then no one else on my team can. So we're kind of looking at this in the hopes that it's going to improve the selection process and make it so that we have a little bit more balanced teams and ones that are going to play well together.
No, that's super interesting. And just so I understand, the proposed change, not set yet, would be that you and the rest of the committee would essentially pick 2 captains, and those captains would pick from the resumes to fill out their teams. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. And just a clarification, I haven't been on the selection teams in the past.
Oh, okay, sorry. But the selection team would essentially pick these captains, and those captains would have complete control in making their teams, assuming that these players applied for the WTC.
Yep.
So you could enable, like you said, hopefully this is a little bit better faction balancing. The person can pick people that they have a better rapport with. And then geographically, that could make a big difference. Let's say hypothetically, there's a team in Florida that wants to play together. They could end up on the same team and they could dojo and practice more easily then, right?
Yes. So to reiterate, the old method, the selection committee would pick 10 players. With the new method that's under consideration, the selection committee would pick 2 captains, and that would be all that they pick.
Awesome. And when do you think you'll have a final on this? Is this in CID currently, so to speak?
we'll probably have an announcement post WTC, probably around War Machine weekend time is where we've generally tried to have some final information on that.
Awesome. Well, that's great to know. Definitely changes things for people, right? In the past, we've kind of talked about, and I know off the record, about what are things you should build on for WTC. But now a lot of that is really going to be just interacting with people that you think potentially be captains and building a rapport. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely one of the fears of this new system is that it has the potential of turning into an old boys club. And one of the things I liked about the old system is that we did see a fair number of fresh faces of people who had not been to the WTC, who had a chance to make it onto various teams. And one of the things that I've come to realize is that really there's no perfect selection method that will make everyone happy. And so I don't necessarily mind the idea of, you know, every few years changing the system and, you know, shaking things up.
No, that sounds awesome. I mean, I'm excited about it. I think it has great potential, and I'm really excited to see who applies to be captains for America. I imagine that some of the old hands, right, just get a little, not tired, but maybe tired, burnt out about going all the time. So I don't know how long you'd even have those boys club teams going, right?
Yeah, that's fair. There's also, not to put words in his mouth or, but as an example, JVM is a player who has, obviously he's been one of the most successful American players lately and would probably be in contention for being picked as a captain. But in general, he's preferred being a player. And so I agree with you. It will be pretty interesting to see who kind of steps up and says that that's a role that they're interested in.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And I'm, like I said, I'm really excited to see kind of how that susses out. Would you still, in this situation, do the solo master slot from ATC, or how do you think that plays out?
I think we're, so in the past, we haven't had a great turnout for that event. And so I think we're probably going to be dropping the solo masters for at least probably the year coming up.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, so many players love the ATC. I think the solo masters had 5 people this year.
I'm not sure. It might have been more than that. Honestly, it feels like if we're going to do something like that, that it makes more sense probably to pick another event where, and it would kind of be nice if it wasn't, say, like War Machine Weekend or Lock and Load, but an event or format where if we told people, like, say it was the Las Vegas Open. If you win the Las Vegas Open Masters and you're American, then that would guarantee you a slot into the WTC. I think that would probably achieve the goal of what we had of wanting, like, a solo person being able to fight their way onto a team better than the solo masters did at the ATC.
No, absolutely. And like you said, it would have to be something early in the con season. LVO seems like a prime example, but jump right. That hurdle when we get there. Thank you for the possibly breaking WTC news. That sounds really awesome. I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah.
We share a lot of passions, you and I, right? War Machine being one of them. But I think another passion we have is we're each foodies, really, right? Does that sound correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Well, quickly, can you explain what about food excites you? Like, can you try to explain your culinary preferences in
Sure. So the first thing, obviously, is that I just love eating delicious food. The second thing is that I think that it seems more and more that food is starting to become appreciated as an art form. And I think that that's true. And it's an art form that I appreciate. The other thing that I appreciate about it is that, as an example, My favorite movie of all time is a movie that's called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And the reason why I love that movie isn't just because it's about sushi. I mean, that's just the first layer of the movie. The reason why I love the movie is because it's about this man who has dedicated his whole life to something that he loves and to becoming a master with it. And you know, I just think that there's something very beautiful about that. And there's a lot of life lessons with that. And like the very first scene in the movie is, you know, this old man talking into the camera, and he tells you like the secret to happiness in life. And so there's I have a lot of respect for people who dedicate their life to this art of making food.
And that movie is actually, that's about Hiro Ono, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awesome. So with that in mind, I was hoping that Jay and I, real quickly, we would just bounce through a few places on the War Machine Weekend trail, so to speak, and we'd recommend, one or two places in each city that you should check out. I mean, so much about traveling to big conventions for me has turned into the quote-unquote after party, who I'm going to hang out with, where we're going to get food. And I've got a few places in mind. Do you mind if I take the lead on this one, Jay?
Sure, go ahead.
So coming up on July 21st is the Riverfront Rumble in St. Paul, and a place I personally adore, and I might butcher this enunciation, and I apologize to any of the Polish people if I offend you. I believe it's pronounced Czarnomysłowsk. It's a Polish deli with what I'd like to call Eastern European comfort food, including homemade sausages. When you walk in, it looks like a New York delicatessen, but if you veer to the left, there's an open seating area, and that's where the magic happens. For people looking for something safe, they have brats, which are divine, and a Reuben that's inspired. All the meats are made in-house. For people that are a little bit more adventurous out there, the pierogi portions are extremely generous, the stuffed cabbage is succulent, and the Ukrainian meatballs put IKEA to shame. So if you're out in St. Paul for the Riverfront Rumble, do me a favor and check out Charmazuks. It's spelled K-R-A-M-A-R-Z-U-K-S. So Jay, what do you have on your first list?
Okay, so the first con that I'm going to recommend is the one that I just went to, and that's going to be Lock and Load. So if possible, I would recommend going an extra day, especially if you haven't spent much time in that area, and go to Seattle. And when you go to Seattle, you'll want to go to Pike's Place Market and walk through that. And then as you're walking towards the Space Needle, you'll pass a restaurant that's called Dahlia Lounge. And it is a restaurant by Tom Douglas. He has quite a few restaurants in Seattle. And it's just really, really good. The Peking duck is kind of the signature dish of the place. When you finish eating there, I'd recommend continuing walking on to the Space Needle. And they have an art museum there that it's called the Chihuly Museum. And it's very impressive. It's this glass artwork that's blown glass that was by this guy named Chihuly. And it's just a very unique experience to get to see it. And so that's definitely a very entertaining day to do that. Brian and I actually try to do that. We don't always go to Chihuly, but we always try to go to like Pike's Place and Dahlia Lounge every time we go to Seattle. One other recommend for that area, if you like a crab boil, then there's the Crab Pot. I think they have several locations in both Seattle and Bellevue that you can go to. That it's just kind of fun to, you'll go there with your friends, you'll order your crab pot, and they dump it on the table, and then you guys just go to town eating.
You get to wear a bib.
Yep.
I'm down. That sounds incredible. So next on the list for me is actually Washington, D.C., and that's where the Nova Open is this coming September 2nd. And close to downtown, just a little bit east of Logan Circle, is called Share Ethiopian. Inside a bright, otherwise unassuming red door is an adorable maybe 10-table restaurant. Like, they would be cramped if you fit 20 people inside this thing, with some of the best Ethiopian food I've ever eaten. For those of you who have never eaten Ethiopian, silverware is generally frowned upon. You're relying on a spongy sourdough teff flatbread called injera to scoop your food up with. For the carnivores out there, I love yerbigwat, which is a lamb dish that hides a spicy heat under a rich, savory tomato sauce. For vegetarians, you can never really go wrong with spicy lentils in a bear sauce. I might be pronouncing it wrong. That's French. I am not French. But I know it contains basically chili, garlic, ginger, and basil. And the Yasmin Kitwet has never disappointed. And heated up for leftovers, it really makes a phenomenal breakfast. Have you had Ethiopian before, Jay?
I haven't. I've wanted to, but it's not a very common ethnic food in the various places that I've traveled.
Fair. Well, if you hit up Nova Open, I definitely recommend it. So what do you have next, Jay?
So the next one is for Kingdom Con in San Diego, which is, it's a very fun regional con that's kind of a party drinking one as well, and hot tubbing with Pagani as well. He loves doing that basically everywhere. But there's a restaurant called Juniper and Ivy. It is by Richard Blaze, who won Top Chef one of the seasons. He was kind of famous for being a molecular gastronomist. There isn't too much. There is some of that at this restaurant, but it's not like crazy out of control that you're kind of freaked out what you're eating. It's a small plates restaurant where you'll order a bunch of different things and eat them, which is kind of nice. I mean, you're not going to, if there's something you don't like, then you're not like stuck with it for your whole meal. And another thing that's nice about it as well is I've noticed this with a lot of restaurants sometimes, where like the appetizers are some of the most exciting things on the menu, and then you get to the entrees and they're a lot more boring. And so that's one of the things that can be fun with the small plates menu sometimes, is that it's a lot of times full of like a bunch of different exciting things that you get to try out. But it's very well done. He's a very good cook. It has a fun atmosphere. It's a little bit hipstery, but still worth going to. It's probably, you're probably going to end up spending, after you get all your small plates, somewhere around $40 to $80 per person, depending on how much everyone orders.
Yeah, and I think small plates are great for someone who maybe isn't normally as culinary adventurous as some people. All right, they have a chance to maybe try yours if you're feeling benevolent. And like you said, it's great to be able to commit to trying something new without, this is going to be my meal for today.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Next up for me is actually in, I grew up in New Jersey. You can hold that against me if you'd like. And the Boker Brawl is a points event in Somerville. And I don't have a specific place to go, but I'd like to talk about pork roll. Some people call it Taylor Ham. They'd be wrong. It's called pork roll. So, Jay, have you ever had or heard of pork roll?
I have not. Neither. No.
Okay. I'm not going to do it justice, but it's similar to a thick sliced bologna or mortadello. It's heavily spiced, and you fry it in a griddle top. You need to cut like a wedge into it so it ends up looking like a Pac-Man, so it doesn't curl up. You flip it over, you slab a little bit of mayonnaise on it, you cover it in cheese, and you serve it on a hard roll with a fried egg or two for breakfast. There is literally no better breakfast under 2,000 calories that I swear by. So when you're in Jersey, do me a favor and get yourself a pork roll on a Kaiser roll. I know it sounds weird, but it's delectable. The grease of the pork roll mixes with this kind of warm mayonnaise, and it just seeps into the hard roll. And some of you might not be hungry after hearing that, but I promise you, it is delectable.
That does sound pretty good. Yes.
So, Jay, what do you have next on your list?
Okay, so the next event is actually War Machine Weekend event. So, War Machine Weekend itself. So, War Machine Weekend is at St. Louis. St. Louis is kind of a hellhole. I'm sorry to anyone who lives there if I'm offending you, but it's every year it's like the least favorite place for Brian and I to go to, and it's right around Brian's birthday, and he's like, I can't believe that you're dragging me to St. Louis around my birthday. But and there was one year that was on his birthday, and it like went horribly. But after years of going to St. Louis, I have two recommendations for you. So the first one is right next to the venue. There's kind of a building that has several floors that goes up, and on the top of it is a place called Kobe Steakhouse. And it is a teppanyaki place, kind of like Benihana. And so one of the traditions we've created is that on Sunday night, the last night of the event, I'll book the biggest reservation I can as late as I can at that place, and I'll get a full griddle that will go there to it, and the food's fine, but it's mainly pretty entertaining to go there and, you know, go to a teppanyaki place with your friends and after con and just kind of have like the, you know, post con chat and the friendship socializing thing going on. And so it's really good for that. It does a large group of people well, because that's kind of what they specialize in. The other one that I'd recommend, on this one, you're going to have to take an Uber a little ways to go to, but I had a friend who actually, he's a delightful guy who lives in St. Louis, and I don't hold that against him. And he gave me a recommendation last year, and it's for a place called The Crossing. It is a farm-to-table restaurant that I thought the prices were actually very reasonable for the quality. I'm doing this off of memory, but it seems like they had a four-course menu that you could get for $35. And
that's very reasonable.
Yeah, right. It's all great tasting food. And so by the time you get to St. Louis or make it out to War Machine Weekend, if they've been popular, maybe their prices will have gone up a little bit. But if you like fresh ingredients that are well done, or prepared well, then it's a restaurant that I would recommend. The Crossing in St. Louis.
Awesome. So I only have two places left, and the next place is, I'm sure, somewhere you and I could talk about food for forever, but it's in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Open, and it's Momofuku, which is a David Chang restaurant, my Korean brother, and it's in the Cosmopolitan. It is not somewhere to go if you have a budget, but the family-style meals that they have there are really awesome. It's similar to the Tabanaki, where it's just like a lot of food being plopped down in the middle of the table. They have a salt and pepper, lobster and shrimp, which I think is something crazy, like six lobster tails that end up being plopped down in the middle. They have a five spice rotisserie duck. They have all sorts of small plates and buns that you can get. It's amazing. If you haven't had a chance to eat at one of David Chang's restaurants, it's really inspired. It's a nice take on like modern Korean food. And then he also does a great podcast on The Ringer called The David Chang Experience. And the way he talks about food, what inspires him, and what he tries to do with his restaurants, I've really enjoyed. And the other great thing about it being in Vegas is it's open really late. So after Masters or Champions, you can definitely go over there, get a great meal with your friends. But again, it is not somewhere to go if you are concerned about the price. It was phenomenal. I think my significant other, my wonderful girlfriend, Meg, and I think we were about $300 for the two of us to eat there, but it was worth every penny. I promise you that. So
I didn't get to go to the LVO this last year, or else I would have gone there, but I'm planning on going this year coming up. And it's definitely, there's two places in Vegas that I know for sure I want to go to. And that's one of the two.
What's the other place?
The other one I want to go to, I've been to several times, but I just like going back there because I think the food's well done and the price is pretty reasonable for Vegas, which means that it's you're probably going to be like around $50 to $80 for your meal, for a high quality meal. But it's Bouchon, which I'm probably also saying wrong, but it's a French word as well. And it's a restaurant that's by Thomas Keller, who he also does the restaurants like the French Laundry, and is one of the most famous chefs in the country. But it's highly recommended for me.
Yeah, and the other place in Las Vegas I just want to mention real quick as a quick shout out is actually Masaharu Morimoto's restaurant. It's just called Morimoto, which is a little ostentatious, but that's fine. He used to be an Iron Chef. I geeked out as a kid watching him there. It's a fantastic sushi restaurant. Again, it's not cheap, but Morimoto was fantastic. I had a chance to go there this year. So last up for me is just here in my hometown, Boulder, Colorado. It's right down the street from where the Rocky Mountain Rumble is, which just happened a few weeks ago and will be again happening next year around June. And it's the Dark Horse Bar. And it's a total dive bar. One of the advantages of it, though, is they do serve food up till 2 a.m. You only can pay with cash. They're going to have big wheel races if you go on Saturday night, so you might get your feet run over. It's just a fantastic dive bar. It's loud. The beers are cheap. You go up to this really sketchy window, and you just order your burger. There's virtually no menu. But if you get like a double burger with green chili and cheese, it's going to be delicious. It's going to be grease. That's the only thing you happen to eat that day because it's a tournament. You're going to be happy. But when you're in town for the Rocky Mountain Rumble, and I hope you come out and I hope I get to see you all, I highly recommend the Dark Horse just down there in Boulder, Colorado. It's a local classic. So, Jay, what else do you have?
So the last city I have recommends for is Chicago. So I love going to Chicago. It's an awesome city. Adepticon is a very fun event. And so I have two recommendations for Chicago. The first one is that if you are going to Chicago, you need to eat some Chicago deep dish pizza. And
that's not pizza.
Yeah. Anyone who I should have realized, you being from New Jersey, that it was going to start like this pizza debate. I don't give a fuck. I like delicious food.
That's fine. It's a casserole. Like, you can enjoy your casserole.
Whatever. I mean, go jerk off in the corner over the pizza debate, and then when you're done, eat the pizza / casserole and enjoy yourself. But I'd recommend Lou Malnati's as a chain. They will deliver to the venue, and so really you don't have any excuse to not enjoy some delicious pizza slash casserole. And then the last one that I'll recommend to you is also in Chicago. And this one is kind of a bucket list item, like once in a lifetime experience. It's the best meal that I've ever eaten in my life. And that's Alinea. It's Alinea. And if you watch Chef's Table on Netflix, I think it's season 2, episode 1 is about that chef and that restaurant. And he's a fascinating chef and he has kind of a fascinating story, but in order to go there, you have to go on their website and buy a reservation. And it's kind of like getting a ticket to an event. You are reserving a time, you're paying in advance. Tip and gratuity are already included in the purchase price. And so when we go and eat there, we don't have to pay anything at the end because it's all paid beforehand. And it's also kind of like it's kind of like going to a rock concert, both in its price, but also in he's trying to give you an experience with all of your senses. And he's probably the chef that I've had the experience with that he's done this most successfully. And he will be tying in things visually. He will do things with audio and smells, sights. Just the whole experience is amazing. It will, in general, it usually lasts about 2.5-3 hours, and it's a bunch of small courses that you're eating through the night. And if you're someone who considers yourself a foodie, then save up your money and, you know, figure out a way to go there. And in my opinion, you will not be disappointed.
No, that sounds amazing. I haven't had, I haven't eaten there before, but it sounds great. I've done some of those weirder places, like the one where you basically eat in the dark to remove your sense of sight. And that was a really interesting experience. So I can only imagine if he's catering the entire experience, it really sounds incredible.
Yeah. And the thing that's interesting to me about it is that it doesn't feel gimmicky necessarily. It is just, he is, and if you watch the Netflix series about it too, he kind of talks about it, but he's trying to engage all of your senses into this dining experience. And he's also trying to flip all of your expectations with the experience as well.
And what was the name of that restaurant one more time?
It's called Alinea.
Okay.
Alinea.
Awesome. I'll be sure to check that out. So I feel like we can't talk about eating with all your senses without mentioning Fong's Pizza in Des Moines, Iowa, which is a favorite of everyone I met that was a local at MuseCon. Have you had the privilege to go to Fong's, Jay?
I have been to Fong's. I've recently been starting to go to Des Moines more frequently with working with Muse on Minis. And I actually have some friends here in Idaho who went to college in Des Moines, and they love Des Moines. And so I asked them, like, oh, what are some recommendations? And Fong's was on the top of their list.
And what did you think of Fong's?
It's fine. Okay, so that's all it's going to get for me.
I was also, people recommended it, and some locals were kind enough to go there with me. And it offended the part of me that loves Asian food. And then it offended the part of me that loves Asian American food. And then it really offended the pretentious Jerseyite in me who loves pizza. So while Fong's Garden may live on fondly in all of your hearts in Iowa, I would highly recommend not going at all. And if I'm not invited back to MuseCon, I understand, but I can't, I'm not going
to
go there.
I mean, you almost have to go just to have like the Fong's experience, I guess. But
I don't think so. Like, I've seen other people get in car accidents. I don't need to get in a car accident. It's you don't have to go there, but I guess if you want to, that's fine.
I'll be honest. So far in my trips to Des Moines, I've not yet been to a restaurant that I would recommend to someone else.
I mean, I was excited to see there was a Bennigan's, but that was more just like a weird nostalgia. I didn't know this establishment was still open. It wasn't because I was excited to get indigestion. Zombie Burger in Iowa, I was actually okay with. It's a weird, forced, kitschy experience, but it was open late and it was a greasy burger. But Fong's Pizza, I guess shots fired. I do not recommend. Yeah.
Probably my best meal so far in Des Moines has been from Panera. So...
Okay. I mean, sometimes chain restaurants have their place. You kind of know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do have to ask anyone that follows you on social media, like what's going on with PF Chang's? Are you sponsored? Do you have partial ownership in the establishment?
So what you have to understand about my relationship with PF Chang's and Brian's and Hungerford's is that Brian legitimately likes PF Chang's, and part of what he likes about it is that he can go there and he can get a meal that is actually fairly healthy and have an enjoyable meal, which can be difficult to accomplish with his dietary restrictions when we're traveling. So that's part A. Part B is that basically every time at a con, I'll try to schedule a meal with Hungerford where we go to PF Chang's, and like half of the fun of doing it is just Hungerford and I trolling each other back and forth. And so I'll be like, oh, I'm so excited to go to PF Chang's with you. And he'll be like, this place is the fucking worst. I don't understand why we go here every convention. And just like watching the Hungerford show of him, like, shitting on like how much he hates this restaurant. And the thing that's funny about it is that like I've asked people who've gone with us afterwards and like witnessed the whole show, and I'll be like, so do you think that Hungerford like actually dislikes PF Chang's, or is it just like this performance that he does? And like everyone I've asked has been like, you know, I'm not really sure. although if you ask him, he will say that it's absolute garbage and is not an act. So it's just adds yet another layer of fun onto going out to eat with Hungerford.
So it sounds like dinner and a show at PF Chang's.
Do you have any news or announcements for Discount Games or Muse? I saw that Muse's Crucible Guard tokens are almost done. Anything else happening over there that's exciting?
We have that. We have the 3D pre-printed wood buildings that you just assemble them together, and they're these pretty sweet 3D wood buildings that you can play with. As far as with Discount Games, we have our special pricing with Privateer Press and Games Workshop that if you email me at j@discountgamesinc.com, then I can give you details on how you can get even bigger savings than what is on the website.
Yeah, no, I don't work for Discount Games, so I think I can say this. It's 30% off if you spend $100. And I think I can say that. Maybe one of the wills will yell at me. And it's free shipping over $30. Like I said, 30% off. It just puts it at a fantastic value if you're looking to save a bit of money. And I believe you're taking pre-orders on everything Crucible Guard that's been announced.
Yeah, everything that's been announced, which is not as much as I would like, but you know, it is what it is. We also have the if people are interested in Monster Apocalypse, we have those starters and items that are up for pre-sale right now as well.
All right, Jay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I had a lot of fun going through the conversation. I'm starving right now, so I'm going to go get some food and be upset it's not as amazing as the places we've talked about. Thank you again.
You bet. Thank you.
That wraps up today's episode of Tangential with Sung Soo. Be sure to follow me at Facebook at CO Wargaming to stay up to date with all my content. You can also find me on Twitter at Sung Soo. I'd love to hear from everyone, good, bad, or otherwise. I'd like to thank Jay for coming on the show. Also, Muse on Minis for hosting all my podcast forays. I hope this podcast was educational, entertaining, and inspiring. Till next time, cheers.